We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mitch Holthus coming up at 7:30. I love the genesis of this, by the way. Mitch has just booked himself for our show forever. He's going to join us Tuesdays at 7:30. So we'll talk all things Chiefs with Mitch Holthus. We'll ask him about our homework assignment, which is the pick two game for Eric Berry. That is the game to watch today. You can go to NFL Game Pass, sign up for the free account. Watch the game from 2016, Week 13, and we'll discuss it tomorrow. I think you and I, who had the same impression of the last time we saw Eric Berry in our review game, which was the Jamal Charles 5-touchdown game, are like, yeah, the end kind of soured it. He was really good.
He was really good. I guess I didn't realize in the moment how good Eric Berry truly was until you go back and revisit it and see how it ended, because it ended in a really bad way.
And a member, I feel like that happens a lot to a lot of athletes that just kind of like wear out their welcome. I don't know if that's the best way to put it, but like they just play past their prime, and then you only wind up remembering the last year or so of their career and forget all of the rest of that dominance they were able to have.
No question.
Bad contracts can do that.
Yeah, bad. Like Alex Gordon might be a guy that, like, especially here in Kansas City, that was really true for. I mean, you paid him pennies when he was performing great. Then he signs a huge deal, and he has a huge regression. And he's one of the worst hitters in all of baseball. And then you're like, you forget all of the other times that he was really good, and all you can remember is the 200 hitting Alex Gordon.
Right, you remember what like is right in front of your face, but I think with Eric Berry, I think it, you know, the revisionist history is going to change as we get further and further away. I think from his time here in Kansas City, because we know at the end, you know, the thing that bothered me most about Eric Berry is that, you know, on Monday he was telling everybody he was going to play, and then by Thursday he wasn't going to play, and they devised game plans that included Eric Berry in the lineup, and then he's changed his mind late in the week, and he wasn't into it, and that's fine. Again, we've said I don't blame Eric Berry at all for checking out and not having that same passion and love for football that we saw in that game for the Raiders after he had, you know, beat cancer and went through all of that in his life to get back to play football. I can completely understand not having that same love for the game after you just won a battle for your life. And so I get all that. But you also have to remember you're part of a team. And if you're going to be out there, like the NFL isn't wired that way where they think, you know, ultimately that you're part of a team. If you're going to be there and you're going to show up, then you're going to give it your all. And if you're not, then you're going to hit the bricks. And I think Eric Berry was, you know, having a hard time giving it his all and falling back in love with football. And I completely understand that. On the other side, though, you're letting your team down. And that's what really soured for me at the end, is the way that he kind of, I guess you could say, no-showed on his team, maybe, I guess, you know, at the end there. And that stinks.
Yeah, he was a member of the All-Decade team, too, announced yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll be able to revisit a little bit that pick two game again, how good he was in his prime here in Kansas City. So we'll discuss that and more with Mitch Holthus coming up at 7:30. Mitchell Schwartz, the Chiefs offensive lineman, he's not cooking on Twitter, was appearing on the Rome Show, right?
Yeah.
Jim Rome Show. And shining on Kansas City. We love to hear this stuff, right? His brother, of course, played previous to him, Jeff Schwartz, here in Kansas City, and certainly helped him with the transition.
He told me, you know, Coach Reed is awesome. You know, that was one of the biggest reasons I came here, was knowing what Coach had done in Philly and kind of the foundation he had laid in Kansas City, and, you know, the stability of the organization. And so my brother had told me about all that. And then he said on game day, kind of to your point, the coolest thing you'll ever experience is, you know, driving to the game. and from half a mile away, you'll see this kind of layer of smoke, and it's all the Arrowhead fans out there tailgating, cooking barbecue. And so you pull up into the stadium, and as a big guy who likes to cook, you get to smell that wood burning, you get to smell the barbecue walking into the stadium, and there's nothing like it. I mean, the fan support is, crazy. I mean, it's something that, we realize when, we had this run of success, just how huge Chiefs Kingdom was, and some of the shots from the parade. I mean, we had over 1 million people on a day that was, 32 or 34 degrees come out and cheer us on. So, the fans are awesome. Arrowhead, it's an amazing experience. And, games like that in particular, as you said, it's just something that you don't see elsewhere.
Whenever I hear Mitch talk about food, I'm always surprised he makes it into the stadium.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Like, you're a guy like that. How do you roll in there? Don't you just start going to tailgates and grabbing a burger
or something? He's like in full uniform, and he's kind of like walking like a zombie through the crowd, like sniffing.
Maybe he wears like a nose plug so he doesn't smell it or something.
It feels like he would have a hard time getting to his locker.
Yeah, it would be. I was thinking the exact same thing as listening to him talk about that and discuss how, he smells the barbecue and everybody grilling and all that kind of stuff. And then I got to go in there and I got to play a game. And not just
he didn't tell me how hard that was, my brother.
But I got to match up against some of the best in the league. I got to play the best right tackle position in the NFL. I got to go out there and really focus and make sure that I'm, up for this thing. But meanwhile, I can smell like bacon, wrapped scallops or, barbecue or tenderloin or whatever.
He could probably just smell like that's bacon wrapped scallops somewhere out of Lot D.
Scallops is the first thing.
Smell shrimp. Yeah, like Mitch could absolutely pinpoint exactly what's cooking and like where it is and like, probably lead everybody to it.
Like the fat kid from Goonies that could smell ice cream?
Yeah.
I think the one thing that also jumped out to me from Schwartz is like, and I know he was here prior to Patrick Mahomes landing in Kansas City, but he said that one of the biggest reasons that he signed here was because of Andy Reid. And I know that we've started giving Pat Mahomes a ton of credit for being the reason that guys sign in Kansas City. But I think that Reid also deserves a big portion of that. I mean, this guy's been bringing in talent to Kansas City way before Mahomes got here. And I think that when you look at, like I know last year we were doing how much credit do you give for Patrick Mahomes and how much credit do you give Andy Reid? It started to become a real, like, Tom and Bill argument, who needs who more, who does more for who. I think that right now when you look at the way that this team is progressing in the future, like, if we're talking about a dynasty here, I'm curious what you guys would think about this. Like, I think that Andy Reid, honestly, would be the biggest reason for success in building a dynasty here in Kansas City. I mean, not only did he lay the foundation prior to Patrick Mahomes coming here, but he's going to be doing that for years to come. I think a lot of the ways, at least that I think about the future for Patrick Mahomes, it's all hinged on Andy Reid. Like, it's all hinged on him being with Andy Reid and continuing to do it. Because, and I know it's only been a couple of years, but, like, I'm not doubting the skills of Patrick Mahomes, but I don't know what he looks like without Andy Reid at the helm. I don't know what he looks like without Andy Reid being the guy that's pulling the strings and kind of putting everything together for him. And likewise with Andy Reid, like, he needed Patrick Mahomes to get over that hump. So
you know what Andy Reid was without Patrick Mahomes, the guy who couldn't win.
He was also the guy that led Alex Smith to a career year and had him passing for 4,000 yards, things that, like, we never thought you would see from Alex Smith. So I do think, though, that when we talk about over the next decade or so, when you look at Andy Reid and the Chiefs and you look at Patrick Mahomes, I think Andy probably is a little more influential in building a dynasty here in Kansas City. And I know that you need the quarterback. I know you need that guy to be your A1 that's going to be able to put you over the top. But I think Andy Reid is right there in that same conversation. I mean, if you're anybody that's not playing on the offensive side of the ball, I think that you think more about more about Andy Reid than you do about Patrick Mahomes being under center.
Well, but I think we're also going to see the majority of Patrick Mahomes' career in Kansas City without Andy Reid. I would expect, let's just say for numbers' sake, Patrick Mahomes is going to play probably about 15 years, maybe. You'd like to get 15 years
hopefully.
Out of him, hopefully. Andy Reid's probably going to coach 3 or 4 more years. So the majority of Patrick Mahomes' career is going to come without Andy Reid at the helm. So we'll definitely get a look at Patrick Mahomes without Andy Reid. But I've seen Andy Reid without Patrick Mahomes, and I've seen Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes. everybody's a better coach, player, and personnel director with Patrick Mahomes on their team than without Patrick
Mahomes.
What
Mitchell Schwartz also didn't say was, I played in Cleveland. I was just looking to play with a quarterback.
Yeah, I was looking to play anywhere.
A legit quarterback.
Right.
Coach, the coach was big. A legit quarterback is really big, too.
Mm-hmm.
We'll discuss things with Mitch Holtis, the voice of the Chiefs. He joins us next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
We get a chance to chat with Mitch Holtis, the voice of the Chiefs, joining us once again here on Fesco in the Morning. And Mitch, we were voting every week now for a rewatch game, and we wanted to get your memories of this particular game. Our listeners voted, and our rewatch game for today is going to be the Eric Berry Pick 2 game, Week 13 of 2016. A pretty fantastic finish of that one, to say the least.
Josh, it was awesome. By the way, thanks for tweeting out that picture of you and Bob in Bob's spare bedroom. That card table's awesome.
It's fantastic, isn't it? You got to make do with what you got, my man.
We play canasta after the show. It's terrific.
Why do I think in like 30 years my granddaughters will be taking double-decker bus trips by that house going, this is where they broadcast during the coronavirus, like Churchill's bunker. You know, it'll be this famous place with a historical sign outside. All of us. And keep praying and keep hoping and cling to hope. Okay. That was an amazing game, Josh, because Eric Berry was coming back from Kansas. We all know that. But it was his hometown. He was playing in his hometown of Atlanta. And I remember him telling me I don't know how much of his game check, I think maybe two game checks went for buying tickets for people that were there that helped him through his cancer voyage. There were nurses and aides and families and cousins and second cousins and third cousins that were all there that day in the game. I remember in the back of my mind, if you recall, Atlanta went for two a couple of times. The first time in the back of my mind going, now the pick two is available now. It's right there. So they went for it and didn't make it, but I just said, you got to be ready in case there's a scoop and score or pick. And then the second time, because Derrick Johnson almost had an interception on the first one, if I recall. And then Berry gets the pick two and goes over 100 yards for 2 points to get the Chiefs a 29-28 victory. And what was Eric Berry's jersey number?
29, yeah.
29. How many football games, you guys cover sports very closely, how many football games in with a team with a score of 29?
Not many.
All right. That was a bit of a magical moment there. And I'll say this is myopic, Josh, so forgive me. But it's the only pick two in the history of the NFL, so I think I'm the only guy to call a pick two in college. The very first pick two in college I called, and the very first pick two in the NFL I was able to call. So I guess I'm the king of the pick twos.
Put that on your Hall of Fame plaque when you go in, Mitch.
Yeah.
The king of the pick twos. We're talking with Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs here on 610 Sports Radio. And last week we rewatched the game where Jamal had 5 touchdowns against the Oakland Raiders back in 2013. And when we got done with that game, all of us had the same impression when, wow, we were watching that game for Jamal, but Eric Berry was a beast. And by the time, you know, we got to where we are now with Tyrann Mathieu being the beast that he's been on defense, I don't know that we've had an impactful player on this defense like Eric Berry was in that 2013 season. I mean, that guy was a monster that year.
Yeah, he was. And the same thing as well as the Honey Badger was his energy and his play was infectious throughout the entire team. We tend to forget or just let drift that 2013 team was a big piece of laying the foundation for what Andy Reid has done in his 7 years. And we were coming off a 2-14. I said we were phytoplankton. We were at the bottom of the ocean, like coming off the worst year in franchise history because we did not win an AFC game at all. Only time in franchise history to not have an AFC win. And then to come back and start 9-0 in 2013 and EB was a big part of that. And again, his energy and effort went throughout the whole team. The only guy I'd put close as far as a defensive impact player would be Derrick Johnson.
Yeah.
DJ was in that same mode, and he could affect the game at the line of scrimmage. EB could too, but DJ could affect it at every level, front, middle, and back. His explosive plays, high tackle total. I know you're going to ask me a little bit about the All-Decade team. That's one guy I would go to court for and try to defend. The DJ and EB were the two main guys there defensively.
Yeah, and I think you're right about that. Derrick Johnson's my favorite Chief of all time, Mitch. Like, I love watching Derrick Johnson play and everything that he brought to the game. And I've always told Derrick, and he's agreed with me, Todd Haley was the best thing that happened to Derrick Johnson because if he doesn't get benched, he may not turn out to be the linebacker that he ultimately was.
Yeah, we beat Pittsburgh. I think that's the Studebaker game. You guys are having Studebaker on later, right? I'm the warm-up band here for Andy Studebaker.
That's right.
This is, I mean, it's such an honor to just get the stage ready for him. But we beat Pittsburgh, and DJ was on kickoff coverage, and that was it. I mean, if you look at the season, it was, I don't know, we were thinking at the time, I'm thinking at the time, what is Todd trying to do? I remember Jamal Charles was a game inactive. He was standing behind me. It was early that season. He's standing behind me in the booth like 3 hours before game time. I was like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm inactive. Are you hurt? No, I'm just inactive. So I mean, there was a lot of strange things going on, but I guess DJ dealt with it and moved on. But I'm telling you, Derrick Johnson, well, we'll get into him in a second. When you look at his statistics and how he was able to affect a game and the explosive plays he made, very unique defender, and I'm with you, Bob. He's right up there, if not at the top. He's near the top of my all-time Chiefs. I'll put together a book sometime, and I'll have him listed by position, my all-time team, and he's on it. Might be the captain, defensive captain.
And I think we have full appreciation for him here in Kansas City. Why maybe not as much recognition for him on the national stage?
Josh, yeah, I just think it's because there was nothing postseason-wise. If he would have had one of those 55-yard pick sixes like he had against the Jets to beat the Colts in a divisional playoff game, I think that people might think differently of him. DJ was a warrior on some teams that were fighters and grinders, but they didn't get anything done in the postseason. Now, DJ did get the win against Houston in 2015 in the wild card win. And we all kind of chuckle about that now. Hey, was that big a deal? Yeah, it was an enormous deal to get a first playoff win in 22 years. And DJ was one of the first guys I went to find a hug. I mean, I was Jim Valvano after winning the NCAA tournament with NC State in 83. I was in the locker room, but I knew my list of guys that I wanted to find, and DJ was the first guy on that list. But I think in the fact that there weren't these high games as far as awareness nationally probably slides him down. But I could put him on this team. In fact, if whenever you would get into it, I'll make the case. Because Patrick Willis is fine, but I don't know why he's on here instead of Derrick Johnson.
Well, we'll make that case because to me, you know, and I'm biased against Derrick Johnson. Like I said, my favorite player. He can do no wrong in my mind. And so I kind of understand. I'm with you, Mitch. The lack of postseason impact obviously probably kept him off that list. But when you look at what he meant to a team and what he did at the position he played, you're hard pressed to find anybody better in the NFL during his time than Derrick Johnson.
Well, let me just compare him to Patrick Willis here, because if you're saying, well, he should be on the All-Decade team, well, then who comes off? That's the next question. And Willis was a fine player, but only played 5 years of the decade.
Yeah, right.
Willis only played from 10 to 14. He had 374 tackles. This is Patrick Willis. Yes, he had four interceptions, he had 11 sacks, and went to four Pro Bowls. Okay, in the decade, the same decade, DJ has 635 tackles, four monster years, 104 and 11, 109 and 12, 95 and 13, and 95 and 15, eight interceptions, two pick sixes, 14 and a half sacks, four Pro Bowls, and a Pro Bowl MVP. To me, it's not even comparable.
Yeah.
Again, Willis is a fine player. Yay for Ole Miss, hotty-totty, yay for San Francisco. but he is not DJ. And I just think, this is to Josh's point, did DJ just completely, just like a mist, not get consideration on this team? Because that's the guy I put on it.
Any other Chiefs you thought should have had consideration on this all-decade team?
Yeah, and this is going to be a wild one, Josh, because it's Dustin Colquitt. I have, for years, had wailing and gnashing of teeth in the NFL in the way that they gauge punters. They look at gross punting. Now, they lift net as well, but the net is way more important than gross. If I punt the ball 55 yards and you return it 35, it's a net of 20, and the field position reverse flipped on me. I'm not sure there's a punter who's reversed the field as much and as effectively as Dustin Colquitt or did in that decade. I look at punts inside the 10, and I had to do this myself, and I keep track of it, because every time Colquitt has one, I mention it. But they do punts inside the 20 as the NFL metric. And I've talked to our PR department saying, well, we ought to just put it out there. And I've tried to talk to the NFL about punts inside the 10, because that, particularly with the proficiency of offenses, and they use the 20 because of touchbacks. So I understand that. However, if you get the ball at the 17 or you get it at the 5, that makes a big difference in the NFL. And Dustin Colquitt, in his career, 76 punts inside the 10 in that decade. 76. Wow. Nobody in the league was close, is what I can. I haven't gone through every punter because I got to do it all manually by myself and go through every play I play. But that dude, Colquitt flips fields and is the 12th defensive player. And there's not many punters in the league who can say that.
That's incredible. Talking with Mitch Holthus here.
I've always called him the GOAT, Bob.
You have. I mean, and I thought the same thing, too. I looked at it and went, why isn't Colquitt on this list? But then I thought maybe I'm getting greedy as a Chiefs fan, you know, trying to get all our guys on there. But they've had a really good run of players over this last decade. And one of those who may not do it in the regular season, but, man, in the postseason, Sammy Watkins has been really, really good. And I was stumping last week to bring him back and explaining why I want Sammy Watkins back on this team, Mitch, because the way he performs in the postseason and the way that you still have to account for him all the time out there, you know, and it frees up one-on-one coverage maybe for somebody else, or, you know, he's a guy that you have to always be aware of. And just talking with some folks around the organization saying he's more valuable than people give him credit for, I'm happy that Sammy Watkins is back. What do you think about him coming back?
I'm ecstatic. I mean, have a cup of coffee on me at Josh's card table. You've got a Super Bowl team, just won the Super Bowl, with a collection of wide receivers. Mahomes had 2,696 yards to wide receivers. 2,690 return. That's ridiculous. Can you name who had the 6 yards who isn't returning?
As a receiver?
Yeah.
McCoy?
The no. Anthony Thomas. So yeah, I just put wide receivers. I didn't take the right
receivers.
Right
answer. Yeah.
But the point is, if your wide receiver core, 99.87 of your yards come back. That's so, to your point here, Bob, I think that Sammy Watkins, my excitement about him is the sum is greater than its parts, although the parts are pretty darn good. Now, for Sammy, it's a matter, I think, next year of being consistent. If you look at the last 7 regular season games of the year, and one of the things that I look at, I always analyze every week in getting ready for a game, whether it's the Chiefs or the opponent, are the amount of targets and the amount of production off those targets. Sammy had 44 targets in the last 7 games with just 24 catches, 264 yards, and the only score was the 2-point conversion against Denver. Now, and this is where you zeroed in on it, his postseason production, who performs on the biggest stage. And Sammy came into the Chiefs organization without hardly any postseason experience. He had 1 game with the Rams, and he had maybe 1 catch. Well, in 5 postseason games, it's 24 catches, 20 yards a catch, or close to it. But here's your ratio again. The Chiefs have targeted him in the 5 postseason games he's played for the Chiefs 34 times, but 24 catches. Look at the ratio and the difference. Wow. 464 yards. And then big plays, explosive plays. The 60-yarder against Tennessee, the play against Sherman in the Super Bowl. He is one more guy. I mean, how deep are you going to go in DBs? Because you've got now Mecole Hardman, who I think will take a big jump next year, handling, if we can handle this, the mode and the protocol we're in with the COVID-19. I think Mecole Hardman takes a big jump. Well, if your third DB or your second DB, essentially, or your scheme, has to account for Watkins and Hardman, and D-Rod coming back is big, too. That was last week's discussion. But I think the fact that you put Sammy Watkins makes another big equation on a really, really awesome sum of guys, then it's almost ridiculous when the rest of the NFL looks at it. I know Peter King was looking at it this week and said the same thing.
Mitch, we'll deal you in for a virtual hand of Euchre, and we'll chat with you, and we'll chat with you next week.
Okay, I'm all in. Yeah, let me know. A cup of coffee on me, though. Have it there, right there.
You
okay,
got
right
it. Table. Sounds good.
Yeah, get something Mitch to the dog. Keep him quiet.
Mitch Holton's voice of the Chiefs joining us and mocking our card table today. So that's fun.
What are we supposed to use? Yeah, am I supposed good. To build like a?
Well,
I thought this was going to be temporary.
Andy has the antique table. I guess this one's a
little
bit
better. You can get your legs underneath
this. This is kind of antique. No, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. More than comfortable here at the Fesco accommodations.
I mean, if somebody's got a better table, I mean, I know my friend Amanda said she'd set us up with some office equipment from her company if we wanted to get something done.
Perfect.
But I think
I don't know.
This fits us.
It's perfect.
I mean, it's an old card table.
It fits perfect. They'll be just fine. We'll explain next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Our thanks to Mitch Holthus for dropping by. The All-Decade Team announced by the NFL and the Pro Football Hall of Fame had six players who played for the Chiefs. Three primarily known for their Chiefs careers, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Eric Berry. Three others, including short stays for LeSean McCoy and Darrell Revis.
Those are the two randos, yeah.
Considered Chiefs. They had better careers elsewhere. And then Tyrann Mathieu's in progress. But so
you know when Tyron's done playing, he's never going to mention Houston or Arizona, right, that he played in those two places.
Title here. I think it's probably to the number one portion of his list.
Yeah.
We wanted to ask him which hat he'll wear at the induction ceremony.
Right.
But Mitch Holthus made the case for Derek Johnson.
Yep.
And for Dustin Colquitt to be on that list as well. I can't disagree. I DJ's been one that's, like, nationally is not.
Never got enough
recognition. We love him a lot more than. And at tougher position, I think middle linebacker is kind of that prestige spot. And safety is. Playmaking safeties are a little more rare. So Berry got to fit in that category. Like, he was a little more unique than a, no offense, middle linebacker.
Yeah.
Like, every team's got some form of a middle linebacker, and it's maybe a little harder to me to stand out nationally from that perspective. But he was a first round guy that lived up to the billing. I mean,
you talk about like when you're ranking best draft picks in Chiefs history, Derek Johnson's in your top five.
Yeah,
I mean, you go through. I mean, if you just want to look at first round draft picks, Derek Johnson is, you know, definitely in your top. I mean, the kid's playing quarterbacks right now. It's probably your number one overall. But, I mean, Derek Johnson is in – he may be in your top five draft picks of all time for the time that he put in, what he's – you know, people don't realize as well, I think, that Derek Johnson is the leading tackler in Chiefs history. And when you go back and look at Chiefs history and go back to those early 60s teams that were underachievers as teams, but individually, I mean, they had Hall of Fame players all over those rosters. You go back and just look at the defenses that have been here in Kansas City and the defensive players that have played here in Kansas City, you could probably form a Hall of Fame defense just based on Chiefs. And Derek Johnson is the leading tackler in one of the all-time great defensive organizations. I mean, I always thought I was biased for Derek Johnson because I love him as a player, and I love him even more as a human being. I think he's a great, great, great person, right? So I always thought I was biased about that. But to hear Mitch talk about it and to hear Mitch give the stats compared to Patrick Willis and what he did in the NFL tells me I'm not biased. I'm right on with Derek Johnson. And I don't know if we start needing to stump for Derek Johnson to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame or whatever the case may be, but we need to start stumping for Derek Johnson to let the rest of the world really know how great he was. And it's unfortunate he played on some bad teams and teams that didn't have a lot of postseason success. But Derek Johnson wasn't the reason why those teams weren't having postseason success.
So did Eric
success.
Berry, and he stood out enough to be on this list. You know what I mean?
And he did too, and he didn't play as long as Derek Johnson did. I mean, we used to talk about it all the time. You would go back and look at the stat sheet after a game, and Derek Johnson was a lock for 10 tackles every single game. He was all over the place making plays. And Derek Johnson, to me, is never going to get enough love and enough credit that he deserves for those around the NFL that didn't watch him on a daily basis. He was a remarkable player. And the Sammy Watkins stuff that Mitch talked about too, Josh, the Chiefs now bring back 99.87% of their wide receiver yards from a season ago. In this time where you may not get preseason at all, that's impressive, that's important, and that's needed going into the 2020 season.
Eventually we'll get them throwing in isolation at a park somewhere.
Somewhere, so, right. Yeah, like we did 2011 when they had the lockout going on and everybody was down at Miege having a catch.
Derek Johnson, by the way, 941 solo tackles. That's the, as you mentioned, the career leader for the Chiefs. Derek Thomas, also another pretty good linebacker for the Chiefs. 599 tackles in his career. Now, he did have about 100 more sacks in his career than Derek Johnson.
Yeah, I think, though, Ryan, you're comparing apples to oranges, though, because Derek Johnson was a guy at times, or Derek Thomas was a guy at times that was, you know, was on the line of scrimmage with his hand in there. He was an outside linebacker. His job was to get to the quarterback. Yeah, right. His job was to get to the quarterback and sack the quarterback. I mean, he was Lawrence Taylor. That was his job. His job wasn't to make plays against the run, because people will knock, you know, Derek Thomas. Well, he wasn't good against the run. He didn't have a lot of tackles. I mean, okay, fine, but that wasn't his job. He was exceptional at his job. Derek Johnson's job, I think, is completely different. His job as a middle linebacker wasn't to get to the quarterback and come up with sacks. It was to make plays at the line of scrimmage. It was to make plays behind the line of scrimmage in the running game and stuff like that. And I thought he excelled brilliantly at that. So I think comparing the two Dereks, Johnson and Thomas, is really, to me, comparing apples to oranges, because they were totally different players, but both were unbelievable at their jobs and what was required of them.
Derek Johnson, 27.5 sacks in his entire career. Derek Thomas, 126.5.
100 sacks.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a big number. But again, middle linebackers. I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is a bad analogy, and I haven't looked it up. How many sacks did Mike Singletary? Well, of course, Singletary played when a lot of sacks weren't counted. Dick Butkus played when you didn't track sacks. I mean, a lot of those guys played that middle line.
82, I believe, the year they started counting sacks.
Right, because even Lawrence Taylor's first year in the NFL, they weren't tracking sacks. I mean, so then when Lawrence Taylor came in and he's getting to the quarterback like that, like, we better start counting these as a stat or something like this. This guy's insane.
He's clearly not forgotten. He actually won the bracket. Andy Studebaker joins us next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.